Let me start by introducing Lisa, who is one of the contributors to my book, Store the Crunch. And Lisa's really a fascinating person. She is the winner of the Enterprise Business West Focus Award in 2008 and the Young Entrepreneur of the Year in 2007. But the reason I say Lisa is an interesting person is not just because she's won those awards, but because Lisa formed her business, Google Limited, I believe in a month after you graduated?
In the same month.
In the same month you graduated with £150.
Yeah.
And £50 of that was borrowed from your mum.
Yes.
And £100 was your overdraft.
For my overdraft, that's correct, yeah.
That is quite impressive, I must say. And you've never had a normal 9-to-5 job.
No, straight from university, I went straight into starting my own business.
Well, Lisa, let me tell you, that is a fantastic achievement. It's been 6 years now?
Yep, we're in year six. Next month will be year seven.
So I have to ask you, what did you do with that £150?
I think I bought a few business cards and made a few sort of little leaflets and posters and stuck them up around the place and sort of was open for business.
And that worked?
Yes. Yeah, it did, yeah. Fortunately.
Well, it just goes to show business can be very, very simple if you want it to be.
Yeah.
Well, today we are going to be talking about bookkeeping, which is what you do, that is your business. What was it that attracted you to starting your own business, and why did you choose bookkeeping?
Well, my mum always thought I'd make a good accountant because she could see that I always used to like, you know, playing money games, playing Monopoly, things like that. So she sort of steered me into that direction. But it was something that I really enjoyed anyway. So even, you know, at school, I would be given the position of being a treasurer because I was very trustworthy and I wasn't the kind of person to spend off the money or anything like that. So when I left school, I did the AAT, which is the Association of Accounting Technicians, and I chose that because you were allowed to do it at the age of 16, whereas the other one, sort of CEMA and ACCA, which is the accountancy, other accountancy qualifications, you have to be 18. So AAT gave me a very good grounding into bookkeeping, double entry, debits and credits, and I just really enjoyed it. Really, and I just sort of found that there were, in business owners seem to have a need more for a bookkeeper as opposed to an accountant, so I thought the best thing would be just to specialise in the bookkeeping and stick to that as opposed to trying to be all things to all people. There's plenty of accountants out there, brilliant accountants, but, you know, very few bookkeepers, it would seem.
Well, Lisa, That brings up an interesting point. What is the difference between an accountant and a bookkeeper?
Well, I see it very much like a doctor and a nurse. So to me, a bookkeeper does much more of the day-to-day entries, as much as a nurse would do. So they're doing the checkup, so they're much more hands-on. Bookkeepers do things more like they're on-site, they're doing invoices, payments and receipts, that kind of thing, whereas your accountant, like your doctor, much more highly qualified and does the more sort of specialised sort of things, specialised areas. So accountants do your year-end accounts and then can advise you more on sort of tax implications, tax issues and exit planning if you want to sell your business at a later date. So they're much better for the sort of strategic type of thinking, long-term thinking.
Right.
But there is a little bit of overlap, and, you know, both people, accountants and bookkeepers, might, for example, do your payroll or do your VAT returns. And some, you know, higher level bookkeepers will do year end accounts as well, but there's a qualification sort of distinction between the two parties.
Right. Okay. Well, you mentioned double entry bookkeeping. Can you explain what the key elements of a bookkeeping system are for a small business, a simple small business?
Well, double entry sort of comes historically from when things were done very manually, and what they used to have is literally physical manual books. And what they do on the debit side, if you put £10 on the debit side, you have to put £10 on the credit side. So it's almost like what you did to one side, you did to the other. And in that sense, it always balanced. But in this day and age, for today's small business owner, that's sort of less relevant because you've got computerized systems that do that sort of behind-the-scenes stuff for you. So for small businesses, I think the things that they really need for bookkeeping systems is just to be quite organised and to have files and folders in place.
Okay, so just be organised and keep files and folders. What do you need to keep in those files and folders then?
Right, well, one folder is for things like your sales invoices, and if you're not selling things on by invoice, then at least a folder that has all of your income and income details in there. So if you're running, for example, a shop, cash-based business, some sort of place where you keep all your Zpil receipts. So one folder for all of your income, so you've got that in one place. Second folder for your bank statements, so you've got all of those in one place, because it's quite surprising how people cannot put their hands on their bank statements, so you need to just have a place for those bank statements to live. And then another folder for your supplier bills. You can have one that are bills that have been paid, and a second one for bills that have been unpaid, that aren't yet paid yet. And then perhaps a fifth folder for payroll, if you're running a payroll and you're paying people. So you've got a place where all wage receipts, payslips, any communication with the Inland Revenue is kept.
Okay.
So it's dividing the elements in the business and having a folder for all of those things so that everything's got home, everything lives somewhere.
So to sum up, and I should have said at the beginning, actually, it may be a good idea if you've got something to take notes with, and if you've got or your mobile phone and your computer switched off so you can concentrate and listen. But to sum up, you need to keep records of your income, your bank statement, bills paid and due, and payroll, and a separate folder for each of those is a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, that all sounds very simple. Why do so many businesses struggle with bookkeeping?
I think, you know, when you start a business, most people often, you know, they're very good at some sort of technical skill. They could be a mechanic, hairdresser. They're very good at what they do, plumber, carpenter. Very good at doing the do. But as you're operating and you're running along, you can just get literally bombarded, snowed under with just all these little bits of paper. And when you're having to sort out the paper, it's, you know, billable time. It's not hours that you are getting paid for. And for many people, because of that, they put it to one side and think, you know what, I'll do it in the evening, I'll do it at the weekend, and then it just gets left. And if you're getting busier and busier and busier, you just have more and more bits of paper. You go in here, you go in there, you're picking up receipts, and you just haven't had time to sort through them. Next thing you know, you've got an avalanche.
What should we do to avoid that avalanche? Because I can tell you I know exactly which avalanche you're talking about.
I think if you can set time aside, like you would do, you know, perhaps listen to your favourite soap or something like that, if you can set time aside, whether it's an hour a day, an hour a week, or just, you know, the regular time aside so that it doesn't build up, because it can be quite, you know, I don't know, despairing. If you've got a pile of paperwork, you know in the back of your mind, oh, you know, got to sort it out. And it just stays there, it mounts up, and each time you think about it, your heart sinks, and you just don't want to face it. So if you can set a regular time aside just to keep on top of it, that will make you feel so much more better. And, you know, if you get a system in place, it helps, because you can then, you know, find things as well, because sometimes in having to sort out the entire mess, what happens is you just can't find anything, and that just takes up more time, and then you just, you know, get quite cheesed off about it.
Well, I'm sure you've seen lots and lots of books for lots of businesses.
Yeah.
What are the worst books you've ever seen?
Well, literally just a plastic bag. It was just a bin bag. I wouldn't even say a plastic bag. If it was a carrier bag, it wouldn't have been so bad. It was literally a bin bag, and it was just out of everything I could find. And, you know, in there, there was rubbish, and it was literally, I think, to just put everything in there. But, you know, some of it was the receipts, yeah, and some of it was just, I don't know, you know, crisp wrappers and things like that. And I sorted it all out on my front room floor over Christmas. So remember, that was, I really enjoyed it though. It didn't, you know, bother me. I really quite enjoyed it. But I did think, my goodness, it was probably about 2 years worth of just stuff.
Right. Okay. So in that 2 years, what did she do about her tax return?
Well, what it was is it was coming up to that time. So 1 year had to be submitted to the accountant, and it needed to go into a spreadsheet. And then the second year, that second year end was coming up. So say you begin and you're going by the UK year end from April through to March, and then you've got, say, another 9 or so months before you submit your personal tax return. So it was getting to that point. And often that's when people really will start to deal with things, because they know the statutory government sort of filing deadline is coming up and they can't put it off anymore.
Right. Well, I think it's time for a question.
Okay.
And we've got a question from Graham. And I think this is a great question, so I'm going to expand on it. But let's start with what he asked. And that is, can you explain the difference between net and gross? And do you know a good way to remember the two?
So gross profit. Well, if you think of a profit and loss account, what you have, the elements of a profit and loss account are, you have your sales,
right,
and then you have direct costs, direct expenses, such as the cost of goods sold, for example, if you've got stock. And then income minus your cost of goods sold leaves you with your gross profit. So think of gross as being really fat. And then you take off all of your other expenses, your indirect costs like your telephone, your heat, your light, that kind of thing. And then you're left with your net profit. So gross is fatter, take off the other expenses, and then you're left with your net profit.
Okay. So what exactly do you mean by direct and indirect? Go through that again for me.
So direct costs could be, depending on what type of business you're in, it could be direct labour costs. It could be if you've got stock, if you're in a business which is buying goods for resale, then the direct costs of stock. So things sort of directly related to that business.
Okay.
And then that would leave you with your gross profit, and then your expenses would be things like telephone, heat and light, rent, postage, stationery, and then that leaves you with your net profit. And it's on the net profit that you pay tax.
So you pay tax on your net profit.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that explains net and gross. I'm going to expand that to a few more terms. When you're talking about profits and loss, you've kind of already explained that. But profit and loss, what exactly are we talking about?
if you look at your expenses at any point in time, so it could be over a month, it could be over a quarter, it could be over a year, so any time period, so let's just say we're talking the yearly figures. So over that period of time, you would have either a profit or a loss. And a profit would mean that after your sales and all your expenses, direct and indirect, have been taken away or accounted for, should we say, you've got your sales, you minus your expenses, and then the figure that is left, if that's a positive figure, it means you've made a profit. And if it's a negative figure, it would indicate that you've made a loss, which means basically if you've made a loss, it means that your expenses were higher than your actual income. So in business, we always want to try and have our income to be higher than our expenses so that we have a profit.
That makes sense. Now, an asset and a liability. Can you explain assets and liabilities?
Okay, assets are things that bring you income, so are worthy to us. Assets are the kind of things we want to collect. So examples of assets are to be found on a balance sheet, and examples of assets could be your stock. You can realise that for cash. It could be things like brand name, goodwill. Coca-Cola, for example, has got a good brand name, and as a result, that's an asset for them. Cash in the bank is an asset. Debtors are classed as assets. And debtors are people who owe you money. That's any money outstanding from customers is classed as an asset.
So
things that can be realised for cash is an asset.
So you said goodwill and brand names can be assets as well.
Yeah.
How can you realise your brand name for cash?
Put a value on that. It's really, I suppose, only when it's being sold, or if you're trying to raise money for the business, you want to make it look as attractive as possible to investors by saying, you know, your brand name is worth a lot of money.
Now, is that really, truly, is that relevant for a small business?
Not for a small business. Unless, you know, it depends what you mean by small, because some businesses grow quite rapidly. I think Facebook, for example, has only been around for about 4 years, as we know it. Twitter, I think about 2 years, but I don't know how many sort of people they employ, but it is a name that is recognised and is worth something because of that.
Yeah.
But for a small business, maybe you're just starting off, then brand name wouldn't be on the balance sheet.
On the balance sheet, right.
That's an asset.
That's an asset. What's the liability?
Okay, liabilities, exact opposites of assets. Those are the things that you owe to others and things that actually cost you money. So liabilities could be a bank loan, an overdraft, credit cards, and money owed to your suppliers or creditors, people who you bought something from and you've not paid them yet. So that is classed as a liability, things that you need to settle, things you need to pay for.
Right, so things I need to pay for. So my car, is that an asset or a liability?
If you own it and you've paid it off, you would then be able to sell it for its full amount, so that would be an asset. But, for example, if you don't own it and you're still paying for it, then you don't own it. The person who you bought it from still owns it, perhaps if it's on some sort of lease or something, so then it would be a liability. There is a book called Rich Dad Poor Dad by the author Robert Kiyosaki, and his definition of an asset and a liability is quite interesting. He says that assets feed you, liabilities eat you. If you've got something and it costs you money, that is a liability. It will eat you alive, and it you know. Whereas an asset will put food and food on your table, money in your bank.
Okay. So a clear kind of distinction is whether it's taking money from you or giving money to you, rather than what it is. The same thing.
That's the rich dad definition. And in a way, in our businesses, that is really how we should look at things. Because on an accounting perspective,
uh-huh.
they've got strict criteria, whether it's an asset or a liability, but the entire transaction is always showed within the accounts. So you'd often what you see is liabilities are attached to expenses, so you see the cost of that liability coming out in your expenses, listed as one of your expenses.
Okay, you've lost me there.
Okay. So, for example, say you've got a credit card and you've bought things on your credit card, like, I don't know, stamps. Then that balance owing to your credit card company would be classed as a liability on your balance sheet. And you'd see that expense, all those things you've bought on your credit card, you'd see all those expenses coming out on, as expenses on the profit and loss account.
Right.
Maybe...
Go ahead, what were you going to say?
Rather technical without a diagram. Explain to the listeners, but...
I can.
Yeah.
Well, that brings something up, actually. You have a book that explains all of this.
Yes. It's called Bookkeeping Made Simple, the Google story. And it explains, with lots of pictures, because I love pictures and diagrams, all about assets, liabilities. And there's a little story as well about how to do your bookkeeping. So it's not technical, it's not, you know, this is a debit, this is a credit, and put this in, put that there, and, you know, it's much more a little story which just puts it all into perspective, really, particularly when you're running a business and you've got a million and one other things on your plate, different
right.
things to juggle.
I have to say, it is a very nice and simple book. That a lot of people mistake as a children's book. It's that
yeah.
simple, so nothing to be afraid of when it comes to it. You just buy that book and it makes it all very simple for you. How can people get a hold of that book?
Bookkeeping Made Simple.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon, and you can search for the title or search for the author. The author's myself, Lisa Newton. And it's also available on lulu.com. And if you go into any bookshop, they can order it. It's on their systems. Might not be in stock, but it's on their systems.
Yeah, okay. Getting back to those terms and explaining
okay.
those terms, I've got one more for you. Debtor and creditor.
Okay. So a debtor, another term for a debtor is a customer, or anyone who owes you money. So debtors owe you money. The exact opposite are creditors, and those are people who you owe money to. So often your suppliers, or just anyone who you owe money to. So
that's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
I've got another question. Well, this one's from Peter, and Peter asks, are the books you need to keep for a limited company any different or more complicated than for self-employed accounts?
Okay.
And let's just start by giving a little bit of a clarity on limited company and self-employed before.
Right, okay.
Books.
Yeah, limited companies are separate legal entities in themselves, which means that they are their sort of almost, you know, their own person. So to have a limited company, in the UK, you form that through Companies House, and the website is companieshouse.gov.uk. And when you do that, you actually get a certificate of registration. So it's like a birth certificate. So a limited company is a separate legal entity within itself. So it can send invoices in its own name. So my limited company, Boogles Limited, sends invoices in its own name. And then there are sort of legal filing obligations when you have a limited company. So Companies House every year will need to have a profit and loss account and a balance sheet and the director's report, the few bullet points. And when you file these things online, then they have templates for you. So that's what they need, profit and loss account, balance sheet and a director's report. Whereas, and the other thing with limited companies is that information is public. You can go to Companies House and request data on any limited company. So it's in the public domain. Whereas self-employed, when you're a self-employed individual, you register with the HMRC or Inland Revenue. And by doing that, you have a tax return that you fill out once a year. They will normally, if you're on a paper copy, they'll send them out around about April, May. And if you're registered for their online filing service and they are trying to move everyone onto the online system, then it's mainly emails now.
Right.
And what they really want, depending on what your level of turnover is, but I think if it's less than 15,000, they really just need a very simple profit and loss account. They don't bother with the balance sheet. They just need a simple profit and loss. So it's basically what your sales have been and what your expenses have been. That's what they need to know. And self-employed income, that is private information. That's between you and the Inland Revenue tax inspector.
Right.
So in terms of the records, you always have to keep your records. For example, income that's come in, you need to keep records of that. Expenses, money that's been spent, you have to keep records of that. So record keeping is the same, but it's the information that you give over. Limited companies, they want the balance sheet. Self-employed don't necessarily need to have the balance sheet.
So if you have a small turnover of around less than £15,000 at the moment, you don't need to submit a balance sheet. But should you have one anyway for your own records?
You can give your own peace of mind. And your balance sheet really is a statement of your net worth. It's like when you take off everything that is owed to you and everything that you own, what are you worth? So that's sort of what your balance sheet will tell you for self-employment. But the reason you have to keep on for a limited liability company is so that if you can see what that company is worth, if you like.
Okay.
Individuals don't tend to need to have the balance sheet.
Right. Well, do you have to understand cash flow to run a business?
I think it really helps. And if you don't understand it, then someone in your business needs to help you to understand it, just so that you can keep an eye on it, because it's one of those things. If you run out of cash because you've gone and paid everything, all your expenses out, but you've not focused on getting your cash in from the people who owe you money from your debtors, then it could mean that you run out of cash.
Okay, well, and then let's just take a step back. Explain for the listeners what the term cash flow means and why they need to know that.
Yeah, cash flow is the flow of money coming into and out of the business. So cash flow, I think, is a very popular term. It's bandied about a lot. And it really is. It's cash flowing in, income coming in, and looking at income going out, income flowing out of the business. And it's all about the timing of those payments. So it's all very well, you know, having £1 million flowing in at the end of the month, but if at the beginning of the month you've got payments to make, then the cash won't be there to meet those obligations. So it's about managing the flows of the money in and out.
Okay, so money comes in from sales usually.
Yeah.
And it goes out obviously as expenses.
Right.
I've heard businesses can be making a profit in that way, but still run out of money.
Yes.
How does this happen?
Right. Well, if, and it depends on the type of business, but let's take a business who is selling their goods or services on credit. So that means that they're sending out, they're performing the work, they're doing the job, they're sending out their invoices to their debtors, to their customers, to their clients, and then they're waiting for that payment. So on paper, on a profit and loss account, it would look like, yeah, you've made a lot of sales, that's fantastic, you've made a profit, but if the cash, you know, the money for those sales hasn't been received yet, then cash-wise, they haven't got the cash in their bank account. And so some business owners really aren't even bothered about the sales or anything like that. All they want to know is the bottom line. Is there any cash in the bank account? That's all they're interested in. If there's cash in the account, they're happy. If there's none, then they're not happy. But cash flow is all about keeping an eye on your bank account and your flows of money coming in and going out.
Okay. Well, we have another question about record keeping, and that's to do with VAT. It's from Stephanie, and she asks, how should you keep records for VAT, and should you keep a separate book to record this?
That record, if you're registered for VAT, then I think it's useful if you have a folder and call it, just label it VAT, and in that folder keep copies of your VAT returns. So that if you ever have to refer to them, pick up the folder, there's all your VAT returns going back however many years, 6-7 years. So keeping a folder for copies of your VAT returns and perhaps your calculations, how you worked it out, that's useful. Quite essential really, that's a key thing to do. But in terms of keeping the records for VAT, it's about keeping your income folder and record of your income and keeping records of your expenses. And if you're registered for VAT and you're having to do a VAT return, then all of your expenses, if it's applicable for VAT, should carry a VAT number and should have the VAT amount on it. So you can always refer to those records to say that's where the VAT amount came from. But then you'd have your VAT folder with your actual VAT return in it.
Well, that's VAT covered. Going back to cash flow, you must see some people making some common mistakes. So what are the biggest mistakes that you can make when it comes to cash flow?
Well, I think, in fact, just actually going back to the VAT, if you're registered for VAT and you're on what's called cash accounting, that means that when you receive the cash from your debtor, from your sales invoices, then the VAT on that amount is due to be paid over. So as soon as you receive it, that's when you pay it. And the same for your purchases, as soon as you've incurred and you paid for that bill and it's got VAT on it, then you're eligible to claim it back. So that's called cash VAT. That's a cash VAT scheme. And what I've seen, and it's a common mistake, is that people are managing their business and money's coming in, money's going out, but they're spending the money as they're going along. And what they're actually doing sometimes is spending the VAT money. And they're not realising that, well, actually, say £100 has come in, well, £117.50 has come in. £17.50 of it is the VAT element, if it's 17.5%. That's the VAT element, and that's something that they should be setting aside, putting it into a separate bank account even, so that when their VAT bill is due, once a quarter, they'll have the VAT money ready to pay the VAT bill. But sometimes, you know, people end up using that VAT as, you know, working capital, cash flow in their business. And then when the VAT is due, they haven't got the actual physical cash to actually pay that. So that bill, but yet they've had the money in.
Now, bank account. Obviously, when you have a business bank account, there is a charge for that. So if you wanted a separate bank account just to keep your VAT that you've collected, are banks open to that? Or do they...
Well, it depends. Banks at the moment, I keep getting these messages, banks, we're open for business, and they're very keen to get your business at the moment. And there are certain banks that have free banking packages available. Some have free banking for life, so it's worth just shopping around and seeing what the deals are out there. But if you've already got a bank account and it's online, I know that with my bank account, I can open another account and it doesn't cost me any more money. It's still within under the Boogles Limited sort of banking thing. And I can have a separate account and just put any VAT money to one side into that account. So it doesn't cost you anything. And banks are actually very happy if you've got an account and you're putting cash into it, because, they are trying to build up their reserves and they want cash sitting in their accounts.
Well, you've got money coming in from sales, you may find that the cash flow isn't as efficient as it should be, so you might take out a loan to kind of bridge a gap. Are there any other ways that you can fund the cash flow?
Well, sometimes, businesses are growing so quickly, they need the cash to buy more stocks, to sell, and so on and so forth, so things can really be taken off. So it all depends on what kind of business it is. So, for example, if it is a type of business where you've got stock that you're selling, it could be a matter of taking credit terms, if possible, from the person who you're buying the stock from, so that you're not immediately having to spend that cash to buy the stock to then have to go and resell it. So it's almost like using your suppliers almost like as a form of sort of little miniature sort of financing, if you like. And then aside from that, to improve the cash flow, it might be a matter of actually having to raise money, going to friends and family with cap in hand, see if any of them want to sponsor or donate to your cause, put money in that way. And then if you're in the type of business whereby you're sending out a lot of invoices and basically what you're waiting on is, those invoices to be paid, then you can go for, I think you can get them through the bank, or there are also certain companies that provide invoicing finance. So what they will do is literally you raise your invoices, you send it to them, they release, say, 70% of the cash value of those invoices within, say, 24 or 48 hours. And then when the cash comes in, they're actually paid, you then can pay them back. And they take a small fee for that.
On that point, invoicing finance, I was going to ask you, do they charge interest on that?
All the companies are different. There are lots of different companies out there. Some might charge a minimum amount for a facility like that. Others might charge a minimum or a percentage of the total amount of cash that they release to you. There's different sort of agreements that you can have. And the key thing though is that if that invoice isn't paid within, say, 60 days or 90 days, they're not going to assume that that slow paying debtor, or if that turns out to be a bad debt, they won't assume that responsibility. So you'll have to pay them the entire amount of that invoice, even though that customer hasn't paid you yet. So
right. You have to be very careful with that.
Yeah. And also as well, sometimes they want to credit check all of your debtors before they will assume the responsibility of, releasing 80% of that invoice to you as well.
I see. So far we've got credit terms.
Yeah.
You can obviously raise money by going to your mum. there's invoicing finance. Can raise money against invoices that are not yet paid. So you get the money in advance of the you would actually get it. Are there any other tips you have?
I think sometimes it also depends what you need this cash flow for. So if you're in a service-based business, some businesses only use, for example, subcontractors. And if you're using a lot of subcontractors, you might have an agreement with them whereby they get paid when you get paid. So cash flow becomes less of an issue. It's about as soon as you get the money in, then you will pay them. And often in a service-based business, it's the wages, it's the subcontractors, it's the people, which is the biggest expense of the business. And then for all the things, depending on what you need the cash flow for, some businesses might, instead of buying equipment outright, like computers or photocopying machinery or even vehicles, they might lease them. So you're making smaller payments that are going out instead of big chunks of cash to buy things outright. You're leasing it, but getting the full use and the full value out of that item that you're leasing. So that can just help ease your cash flow. So.
Okay. Great. You've mentioned your company name a few times, Boogle. Where did you get that name from?
It doesn't mean anything. Boogle's a name I heard many years ago, 1990. I was around at my friend's house, and I just liked it. And I thought, right, when I start my company, I'm going to call it Boogle's, and I'm going to expand into other things. So I began with bookkeeping, still do bookkeeping, but we could be doing, you know, Boogle's, planes, trains, hats, cars, who knows, whatever else. So the reason behind it was much more so that it doesn't limit me to just doing one thing. There are pros and cons to it, because I think a name which is descriptive of what it is that you do can be helpful, but at the same time I think sometimes it can be a bit limiting.
Right. Seeing as you've kind of brought up other things, You are actually already doing some other things. You've got a maths game. Tell us about your maths game.
Well, we won an Enterprising Business Award in 2008. And a part of the sort of prize in winning that award was to have, we won some prize money, and we were able to use those funds to develop any aspect of our business that we wanted to. So I have always, because bookkeeping is quite a intangible service, so you can't sort of touch it, you just experience it, I was really quite keen to have something that you could actually touch and see and feel. So because Boogle's, our little logo is a calculator, and Even the name, people, you know, often think, I don't know, I'm a children's entertainer or something. I thought, right, it would be quite useful to do something for kids, because Boogle's quite a sort of friendly, childish name, if you like. And because we do numbers already, do bookkeeping, I thought a maths game would be quite good, because it's also a bit of, you know, giving back as well to youngsters. And just through talking, even to adults, people running their own businesses today, some people have such a fear or an inherent dislike of numbers, of maths, of any type of, you know, thing like that, that I thought, you know what, it would be really good if kids from a very young age just got into numbers and just quite liked it and enjoyed it. Because whether you like it or not, you know, numbers, money, it's all here, it's with us, it's here to stay. And so we've got this game developed, and what happens is you've got Boogle's, and numbers come up on the screen and they flash up. So you have to answer that sum before you run out of time. So it could be addition, subtraction, multiplication or division. these sums will flash on the screen and you answer it before you run out of time. Then as you answer quite a few questions, you have less time, so you're always against the clock to answer the questions. And then the third stage is you have even less time to answer the questions. So it's all about, you know, mental math making you think quickly. And it's aimed really at 5 to 11-year-olds, like primary school children, and just getting them mental arithmetic, thinking quick.
Okay, so 5 to 11-year-olds, so it doesn't get too challenging.
Well, you'd be surprised, because some adults have played it, and it's like, oh my gosh, particularly like the multiplication, it's quite interesting.
So, okay, that's for kids. Sounds like a great thing to be doing. What if you're like me, and you're all grown up, and you still maybe are not quite great with numbers, let's say. As you mentioned earlier, a lot of people have some other skills. They have a great service that they can offer, so they go into business. For these people, what can they do to get their kind of skills up to scratch and make sure that they get their books and cash flow in order?
Well, I think in your business, if you really feel like numbers isn't your strong point, having someone helping you, whether that's your accountant, your bookkeeper, business partner, or just someone who perhaps, I don't know, once a week or once a month, you just sit with them an hour or so, number crunch, go through the numbers, just so that you can see, you know, what direction your business is going in. Business advisors sometimes do it for you, and it just sort of helps to keep you on track as well when you have that accountability, if you like. But I think if it's not your strong point, find someone whose strong point it is and sit with them. Ask a friend. We, you know, do CDs and workshops and things, but local business links as well also sort of run sometimes seminars and things to get you to grips with the numbers. Because it's very important, very, very important.
It is very important. You mentioned you do some things. You do some masterclasses, don't you?
Yes, we've been running them this semester. Just because there are so many new businesses starting up at the moment, and we found sometimes, you know, you don't need to do a whole, you know, if you don't want to train as a bookkeeper, you don't want a career in bookkeeping, you don't want to necessarily do a course in bookkeeping, but what you do need is just that insight, that, you know, 2 hour get to grips, just the numbers you need to know, and just also looking at your own numbers just to see that you are on track. So it was just a way just to help business owners just pull it all together in a, you know, easy to understand way without it being too frightening or, you know, boring, because I know a lot of people think it is boring and it's not. I would say that.
Well, I want to ask you something about your business, because over the last couple of years a lot of people have been struggling. And yourself, you've been winning all these awards, and last year you were nominated for 4 different awards, I believe.
Yeah, well, 5.
You're a finalist in 4 awards. So, what have you been doing so right, and what's been going on over the last 2 years?
I think for us, it's been, you know, we've got brilliant bookkeepers, fantastic team, and I think it's the perseverance, and I also think it's the optimism that we have. I think sometimes we work with lots of different business owners, so you get a sort of like a wider sort of perspective as to, you know, good practice, bad practice, and we're always just trying to you know, implement good practice and just to try and improve, push forward, and not just to stand still. So, you know, being different as well is useful. We're not your typical average bookkeeping company. You know, we do other things. So, like, we have our masterclasses. Mm-hmm. We've got the maths game. So, it's just being innovative and trying new things and just trying to help our clients as best we can to be to have a successful business, because when they're successful, we're successful. So we see very much it's our role to be a championing enterprise and good practice and things like that.
If people want to find out more about you and Google, how can they contact you?
The website is boogles.co.uk, and Boogles is spelt B-O-O-G-L-E-S, boogles.co.uk. Lots of information on our website, pictures, little video as well, which is on YouTube. And we're on lots of the social networking, so we're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, MySpace. You can find us.
That's great. Well, Lisa, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thank you very, very much, because I believe you've gone through some real rescheduling of your life, let's say, with us today.
Yeah.
So thank you very, very much for that.
Thank you.
Just a reminder to everybody, you can find Lisa's two books, in fact, Bookkeeping Made Simple, and Boogles and the Self-Employed Consultant. Both are available on Amazon, I think.
Yes, yep.
That's great. And of course, you can find out more about all of our business big shots at www.thebusinessbigshots.com. And stay in touch for future teletrainings like this. So thank you everybody for listening, and thank you again to you, Lisa, for
thank you.
Giving up your time.
No problem.
Have a great afternoon, everyone.